Welcome back. You're here with Dave and Leanna. You're on QR Calgary and More Than Money. We're joined by Tony Crescenzi, who is the Executive VP Market Strategist and the Generalist Portfolio Manager at PIMCO. We're talking about fixed income. Tony, let's dig in. You know, just at the end of the last segment, we talked a little bit about some of the opportunity, and you mentioned the big six banks. Now, the banks have been on everybody's mind in the United States here recently with some of these high-profile failures. So why don't you chime in if you can and give us your take on, through your working career, what sort of risk this represents to investors in fixed income and interest rates?
Thank you, Dave. In fact, I marked my 40th year working on Wall Street in March, odd to believe, but I started in 1983 and worked at Lehman Brothers and the World Trade Center. I've had a lot of big highlights, and one of those highlights is this banking industry issue that seems to plague capital markets now and then. I read a book not too long ago about the panic of 1907. There always seems to be some reason that people line up outside of a bank or perhaps at their computers these days to move money out of a bank and cause problems. Looking at the story of the past 40 years and what the story tells us is to maintain a long-term orientation when investing, to stay invested, not to worry too much about market timing, which is difficult for any investor. But 1,600 banks failed from 1983 to 2000, according to the FDIC. Another 600 banks since then, 2,200 banks. But what has happened in the equity market during that period, which is a proxy for thinking about other sorts of investments? Well, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 30 times since then. The S&P 500, 25 times. I could point to lots of other types of stress that could be geopolitical, etc. So the important thing for an investor to think about, first and foremost, is to maintain a long-term orientation. Now, of course, every year is different, and we have to think whether we've reached what's called a Minsky moment. A Minsky moment's a period of chaos. Doesn't seem like it, because we never reach what's called a period of Knightian uncertainty. Knightian, for Frank Knight, 1921, book on risk, profit, and uncertainty. Knightian uncertainty is so-called radical uncertainty. It seems investors have a pretty good grasp on the bank story, that smaller banks have these issues with respect to matching their deposit rate, deposits, and their liabilities with their assets in terms of the average maturity. That's what causes problems. Mm-hmm. But the final point is that there's also an understanding that the post-GFC world includes stress testing of big banks. And when investors think about whether big banks might be subjected to stress, they say no, and you see money flocked to these big banks in the time of stress, and they see the stress test results are pretty extraordinary and to the positive. So probably not a great worry. Always do have to worry about these psychological issues, but maintain the long-term orientation, and I think investors will fare well.
So while we're on the topic of risks and things to worry about, can you maybe tell us a little bit more about your process, the risk factors that you look at and consider as you go through in your investing process?
Sure, Leanna. And recall in the last segment, we talked about specific bonds we might like for this climate, including agency mortgage-backed securities, certain short-term investments, certain housing-related investments, structured products. Those are instruments, they're assets, but what about risk factors? What is a risk factor approach? It's a way to think about it is to consider that certain bonds have equity-like properties. Certain equities have bond-like properties. There's a correlation. So one has to be thinking about how much, for example, how much equity risk is in my bond portfolio? And in a high-yield bond, for example, there tends to be more equity risk than there would be, of course, in a U.S. Treasury, where an investor is expected to remain whole. So these days, in looking at the big five, as we call them, duration, yield curve, credit, FX, and option selling strategies, we'd say on duration, we want to have a little more duration, interest rate sensitivity in portfolios than we would have said months ago, because we think the Federal Reserve is close to the end of its rate hike process, and it may be that there's a recession around the corner, or it could be even upon us now, and that therefore interest rates may decline, and we want the ability of total return, meaning some capital gains. So having if prices rise and yields fall. So it's So thinking about the risk factor side of it, we want a little more duration, a little more yield curve, meaning lean a little bit more into short and intermediate maturities than longer term maturities. Not we are overweight credit, but very careful about the type of credit we have, because in a recession there could be stress among credit instruments, and so we want to be careful about where we are in the capital structure in terms of seniority, et cetera, lots to do there. And on the FX side, just to add the final point, is we'd be careful about scaling there too, because it's a period of uncertainty. And so if there's another jump in interest rates or a big recession, the beta correlation on those assets is high and you could get hurt. So we want to be careful about scaling in those assets, but we do want them as diversifiers.
So, Tony, I don't want to put you too much on the spot here, but I do want to talk a little bit about the base case scenario that you guys see playing out. And there's a bunch of assumptions baked into that, like where the Fed is going to stop, when, you know, when they're cutting next, and so on and so forth. I get that. But given what you see today, give us a sense, or retail investors a sense, of where we see the fixed income bond markets going over the next 12, 24, 36 months.
Thanks, Dave. And it does seem that the near-term view is certainly easier to support than the longer-term view. I mean, but it does seem to us that the Federal Reserve is about to complete its rate hike cycle, at least for now, with one last quarter point hike at the start of May, and then it'll stop to assess conditions. One of the main reasons relates to the recent banking story. Banks are a big part of the economic picture. Smaller banks, which we feel will be lending at a slower pace from here, and there's some data evidencing that lately, they account for about half of commercial mortgage loans. They account for about half of loans to consumers, and therefore, if they slow their lending to those entities, then it should affect the economy negatively. And then there's a psychological impact that people think that's going to happen and start paring back as well. But also, two other things I'll mention. One relates to this idea of transmissions. How does monetary policy transmit into the economy? There's five channels. Stock prices. Think of the NASDAQ down 25% from the peak. The S&P down 15%. Stock prices. Bond yields way up. Credit spreads wider, so it makes it more expensive for businesses to borrow money. Fourth, bank lending standards, which had been tightening before the bank story erupted in March and is a big influence. And then finally, the U.S. dollar, which is stronger from last year, although weaker lately. So all those channels are working along with fiscal policy to slow the economy and therefore bring about a lower inflation rate. Final note on that is to think about the slowing in the economy affecting wages. They're running at 4.2% year over year in the United States. But how does that matter to the inflation picture? Subtract productivity, simple way of looking at the cost of doing business, and you get a rate under 3%, which just seems to be where the inflation rate is headed. So a second way to think about whether the Fed's done is this, I'll go quick on this, the proxy Fed funds rate. San Francisco Fed has a gauge of this. It indicates that the Fed funds rate is effectively, and I'll explain why, around 6.5%, not the 5%, ish, that's the Fed has raised the policy rate to. The proxy Fed funds rate takes into account the balance sheet actions and the powerful words of the Fed and other central banks. There's some value to that. I mean, when the Fed says, we're going to keep raising rates, it hurt the markets last year, and it has the effect of raising rates. Secondly, the mortgage-backed securities had widened in yield. Mortgage rates shot up to 7% in the United States, not just because the Fed raised rates, but because it was reducing its holdings of mortgage-backed securities. That 200 basis point spread to treasuries matched the GFC and was up from a typical 75 basis points. So there's some value to that. So if the funds rate is effectively at 6.5, inflation is expected to be 2.5. That's a 4-point real interest rate. Paul Volcker, the legendary Fed chair in 1979 to 83, took it to 5%, that real funds rate, meaning take the policy rate minus inflation. That was enough to get the job done. In the 60s, another nagging problem took a 3-point real rate to fix it there. So here it's near 4. So that looks good to us in the context of the financial conditions tightening and the fiscal authorities tightening. So So that means a much better story, and everything should be fine, we would hope.
We like it. Yeah, everything will be fine. We'll leave it. Well, we have to leave it there, Tony. We're sorry, we've run out of time, but I think that's a perfect spot to leave it on for fixed income investors. Listen, I want to thank you very much for taking some time with us today. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Leanna.
Okay, Leanna, let's bring it all home, because fixed income and interest rates are part of the cash flow story in the income bucket for us. So it is an important piece, but it's only one of the pieces that we have to put together for a proper retirement plan.
That's right. And we'll be talking about all of those pieces at our next seminar, Tuesday, April 25th at 7 p.m. It would be great if you could join us in person at the Carriage House Inn in Calgary. Go to morethanmoneyradio.com to register.
Many people think tax season's coming to an end. The point is, tax season never ends. We're going to talk about, after the break, year-round tactics and strategies that you can use to reduce taxes. Stick around for that. You're on QR Calgary and More Than Money.